And so what happens is that we had a transition to democracy, obviously, which actually gave us democracy and had all these wonderful things. But at the same time, it kind of left on the side hundreds of thousands of victims of the Franco dictatorship who to this day are still trying to bury their loved ones. There's over 114,000 people buried in mass graves in Spain. There are thousands and thousands of children who were stolen from their parents at birth. And there are thousands of people who were tortured and whose torturers still walk freely in the streets. So that's the situation of Spain today in 2019.
So your parents were raised under Franco, and you grew up in Spain during the transition from dictatorship to democracy. So how did that weigh on your interest in making this particular film?
Right, yeah, the origin of the film really is in my heart. So as a Spaniard, and as someone who actually didn't even talk about these issues at all, you know, during my upbringing and even afterwards, when I was very politically active in Spain, this issue didn't even cross our minds, you know. We did not have human rights violations, period, you know, in our minds. And so as I started making films about other parts of the world, other struggles for dignity, like Made in LA, which we'll talk shortly, I think there came a point where it was obvious to me that I had a debt with my own country, and I had to somehow ease a pain that was sort of growing inside me of not dealing with this issue that was so important, actually, to understand our present as a country.
My understanding is you worked on this film for 6-7 years. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the characters you came across along the way?
It was indeed a 7-year production. We filmed for about 6 years. We actually moved to Spain. I was living here in the U.S. I had been here for 12 years, and we moved to Spain to make the film. And so we encounter a lot of really amazing people. We have someone from the very early years, what we call the beginning of those extrajudicial killings, right? So Maria Martin was 6 when her mother was executed and thrown into a mass grave by the side of the road. So since she's 6, Maria Martin goes to the road to put flowers. In a way, that's very metaphoric, right? Like all the, then they built a highway over the road, knowing there was a mass grave. So it's very much what happens in Spain. People go on top of it, kind of ignoring the fact that we have this, right? She's been fighting her entire life to bury her mother in a dignified way. And finally, there are a bit more people, but sort of the third crime that I think we highlight is the issue of the stolen babies, which is absolutely shocking to many of our listeners, probably. But in Spain, there are thousands and thousands of stolen children. The number is 30,000 until year 52. And from year 52 up to the 90s, the crime, which started as a sort of a political punishment, taking kids out of those mothers that had been vanquished in the war, became sort of like a moral crime and profitable as well. They would take children from single mothers or mothers with too many children, in quotes, to give them to people who were more morally fit. And so that actually went up all the way to the 90s, and the Spanish state as a nation has not done anything about it yet.
And this kind of lack of a national reckoning, as you find in your film, it's in contrast to how other countries have dealt with atrocities that have come in their own paths. So you think of like the Nuremberg trials, or other countries have done different things. Can you talk a little bit about what other countries have done when they've had histories like this, and how much that contrasts with what happens in Spain?
It is very hard to define like the correct way to come out of a dictatorship or the correct way to deal with the past atrocities, right? But it is clear, and you point well, that in the film we actually try to show the fact that the one way to do it is not by forgetting it, right? That doesn't heal. It doesn't really help us turn the page, because we don't even read the page, you know? So we have to read it and then turn it. So it's important to, the film highlights countries like Argentina, where there's a lot of resignifying of monuments. There's the creation of museums in places that were tortured centers. There's been trials. I mean, let's not forget the role of justice, right? in today's sort of transitional justice models, justice is really part of the equation, because if you don't have justice, the truth is that you don't have peace for a lot of people. But it is a question that many societies grapple with, the issue of legacies. In this country, we have Confederate monuments, right? So how do we remember the past but not honor it? We, you know, it's just a conversation that goes beyond Spain, and that's why, in a way, the film becomes more universal, right? Because it kind of puts a mirror to the audience. So when the audience is in Spain, the answer is clear. But if the audience is in France or in Mexico or in the United States, for example, then people really have to confront a lot of these ghosts of the past.
And you mentioned the United States having Confederate monuments still. And your film actually did find an American audience through PBS, through the POV program, which is a long-running documentary series that they have. I'd like to talk a little bit about making documentaries in broader terms, especially the market for documentary films, both from the perspective of distributors and consumers. I'm just wondering, you've made films over many years. What is it like in 2019 to get a documentary financed and actually made?
It's an ordeal. I think that's the best sentence, the word that best describes it. It just depends. There are many models, right? Like, I think the one that we like doing is sort of making a film slowly over a period of time, right? I call it slow baking, right? But so that requires a lot of funding. And so for our film, for example, we wrote over 60 funding applications, of which 15 were funded. And so you spend a lot of time actually fundraising. And also, it was a subject that, you know, it was a difficult subject. It's a very complex film and with a lot of layers. And it was very important that we made it correctly, even if it took as long as it did. Mm-hmm. But it really is very difficult, you know. I think there's another level of films where, you know, you just get it funded from the beginning, from a big network. And so it really depends on the kind of film you want to do. Our film... it was important for us that our film was independent, you know, that we had actually the final decision on what we were going to make, and that it could actually have, again, this multi-layer, complex approach, even poetical and lyrical, you know, to a subject. And so, you know, so that people would not just come to see a film about human rights, but people would come to experience, you know, our character's journey towards justice in this film, you know. And I think that's, from our point of view, that's kind of what we want to do. We want the audience to sort of walk in our character's shoes, and there's an expression in Spanish that says to feel like in their skin, you know. And that's how a lot of the conversation changes, to be honest, you know.
You, in this particular instance, you prefer the independent slow-bake approach where you're putting out many different funding applications and kind of cobbling together the money. I do want to ask about kind of the bigger players in documentary filmmaking. You think of streaming services like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon. They've sort of restructured the way that fiction content is produced. They've flooded the market with a lot of fiction programming, and it's opened up opportunities for filmmakers of different kinds. It's certainly diversified the types of content that we see with film and TV. Has all that money made any impact on the documentary side?
Well, on one hand, yes. You know, there is more funding. There is more funders. There is more diversity in the funders. I'm not sure there's a lot more diversity in the subjects, you know, like how many people want to fund a human rights film on Franco. You know what I mean? Like, and so where would you find funding for that? From our point of view, PBS has always been there for this kind of more diverse and you know, stories that can shed light on something bigger, right? But at the same time, it is true that there is that kind of new players, you know. At the same time, I know many people that have gone bankrupt because they made a film so that Netflix bought it, and then Netflix doesn't buy anymore, you know. So, yes, with the new players also come the new rules, and I think the problem is that the market is changing all the time, and so for us who make films slowly, we make them too slow to be able to adjust to the changing market all the time, you know. And so we're still all, as documentary filmmakers, trying to find out that the new rules, you know, and figure out how to do it.
Well, as we talked about, this film, The Silence of Others, premiered to American audiences on PBS through the POV program. What is it like to try to find an audience, though, for a film like this, not just in the U.S. market, but in other markets, and not just Spain? I mean, think about, you want many different types of people to see something like this. How do you do that?
You do it like you do everything, with a lot of work and a lot of commitment and a lot of passion. And so we are sort of the central headquarters of the film, so to speak. Actually, the film has been picked up by many distributors. It's been distributed in Portugal. I mean, in the U.S., it's been in more than 30 cities theatrically, in Brazil. And in France, where it did like 100,000 people, 100,000 people went to see it in theaters. And then it's been bought by many TVs. And so I think that you use the existing channels to be able to reach people. One is theatrical, obviously festivals, theatrical. And then to me, TV, and especially public TV, is the one place where everyone can come see it. And so in Spain, we broadcast in Spanish public television. In the UK, we're going to be in the BBC. And here we were on PBS. So it is important for us that the film is actually on public television, right? Again, for that kind of discourse and conversation that it creates.
I read that Spain's current prime minister actually tweeted something about the film and actually was urging people to watch it. Is that true? Did that happen?
Yeah, absolutely did. So when we had our broadcast, we had a tremendous success on theatrical distribution. It was like about 25,000 people went to see it, which for Spain is very good for a documentary, you know, but there's no documentary tradition there at all. And so we had this amazing luck in having it on public TV. And so that broadcast became truly, and I don't think I'll be able to say this again in my life, a cultural phenomenon. The president of Spain tweeted saying everyone should watch the film. So did the opposition, to urge him to actually do more measures towards memory and towards, again, confronting the past and the legacy. And then actually the film became like trending topic number two, only after Big Brother, which doesn't count, in the entire Spain. And so there were like 57,000 tweets that night. And the next morning when we woke up, this was a program that was in the cultural channel of public television, which is the second channel, which has about like 300,000 people average, right? So the next day when we woke up, we got the news that 1 million people had seen the film. There was this tremendous viral campaign on WhatsApp. In Spain, everyone communicates with WhatsApp. We don't talk to each other anymore. And it just went viral. And so people made the film their own. And that's what I mean. It became sort of a cultural phenomenon that exceeded our capacity as five people working from our living room to create that kind of conversation. And so it's kind of what I was mentioning. There is a need to have this kind of film as a tool for that discussion. And the need is in Spain, but the need is also in France. The need is also here.